Okay. So could you please say your first and last name and spell them?
Jeff Metoxen, JeffMetoxen.
Great, and I'm Sam G, GEE, from UW-Madison. Okay, thanks, Jeff. So could you tell me a little bit about your first memory?
Wow, I guess I would say what really comes to mind is my father when we were little, and my guess is I had to have been before school, because when my dad used to come home, when I think he was much more affectionate and open maybe from a family size that I come from, is being little and running into his arms, that he would pick me up, give me a hug. He came home from work, and I always knew when he came home. You could hear the door open, he's come in, and that was probably the first and last time that hugs were allowed. Beyond that, I don't recall anything like that, so I can only think of a guessing of age, being able to run two, three, 4 years old.
And where was this?
At our home. We grew up in Oneida here. For me, as part of the family, I come from a family of eight. There are six brothers, two sisters, and mom and dad. And when I came along, our family had lived at our home in Oneida and pretty much were there all the time. At this time, my dad's passed on a few years back, and my brother picked up the home, so he lives there now. Mm.
And how long, do you know how long your family had been in Oneida?
They had really always been in Oneida. When I get a chance, and I remember talking to my mom and dad about where they lived previously to that, because for me and the younger part of the family, my brother was a year older than I am, we were born and raised at that old home on Edgar Drive in Oneida here. So when I have discussions with them in the past, they may have lived in a couple different houses, but always in the Oneida area here.
Okay. So you think that goes back like, you know, like 100 years or more?
Well, no, I guess previous to that then, knowing my dad, he had been basically born and raised in the Oneida area, I would say, so it was 1930, and my mom was 1935. My mom's still around, and she, I believe, lived in the Milwaukee area. And for some of the historical background, the Oneida tribe that I'm part of, the Oneida tribe in Wisconsin here, when they moved up here, like in the mid-1800s, I believe, or early 1800s, they resided in this particular region of the state of Wisconsin. And the tribes, as part of the assimilation process that the governments were placing on them, many of the tribes stayed in the Oneida area here, are part of us, but you can find out that the regions they moved to, some of the larger cities, Milwaukee was one, obviously, the larger city for the state of Wisconsin. So there's a pretty large group of Oneida members, and part of my family is down there, and relatives in Milwaukee, but then the larger city as well, Denver, Colorado, Los Angeles, California, New York area, where the United Tribe is originally from, are some of those larger cities where if someone were to study the population of the United Tribe of Wisconsin, you'd see where those members are, where they're located. Excuse me. And the, I don't know how to say this, the statisticians, our enrollment office, they do a great job of tracking where our membership is, where they are, who they are, where they reside. So when a person gets a chance, you can look that information up, and you'll see where majority of the United Tribe of Wisconsin members are in Wisconsin. A vast majority are here in the United area yet, still within reservation boundaries, but then they do stretch out literally all over the world when you take every number into account.
Mm-hmm. So did you ever know your grandparents at all?
When I was younger, my mom's mother was alive. She didn't pass until the mid-70s. So when I was growing up, I got a chance to know my grandma on my mom's side, and my dad's mother had passed, I believe, in the very early 70s. So when I was born, I do remember her. She's one of the only people that ever called me Jefferson. My full name is actually Jeffrey. Jeff's always been the term. And when my grandma would call me on my dad's side, she would always call me Jefferson. She's the only person I really ever did. So I got to know her for the little I recall. And then on my mom's father had actually passed way before I was born, actually, when she was quite young. And so I got to know my step-grandfather, in a sense. And then my dad's side, he was around, knew him pretty well until about the either late 70s or early 80s when he had passed on.
And what was he like?
He was tough. It was always active. There were always some issues we had to face, so that was something that I really wouldn't feel comfortable in sharing. But I did learn how to... we always worked around there. And he'd pay us. I mean, from as little as a quarter if we were doing something. Our feeding, a big thing we've always done is when you help someone out, you feed them. It's not required, but it's something. Usually money was involved, and you would help them, and they would help you. But I remember he could always build things. My brother and I, the one that were closest, he had this garage full of bike parts, and every bike part you could imagine back then. So you're talking in the 70s. We learned how to make a bike from spare parts completely. So we could build a bike as long as we had the parts. And every time our bike broke, we knew to go to his place. We could find our spoke or wheel, tire, chain, pedal. It really didn't matter. And if you hodgepodged a bike together, that's what you do because that's what you had. But when we were young, we helped tear down roofs. Buildings that were needed repairs, we put roofs on, we tore roofs off. We helped build some buildings on a very simplest of matters. So you learn kind of fast around him how to use the hammer and nail, how to cut with saws, never electric stuff. It was always the power, our hand power. But we learned that. And that is something that I would say was a bonus or a plus, that when he was around, it became common for us. You know, for us, as I got older and talking with some other kids, we thought everyone did it in a sense. And you're surprised when you meet some and say, well, if and nothing to be negative about, actually, and saying, if you say someone that hang that picture or pound that up or you got to secure that frame, they may have never pounded a nail before. They never knew there was different nails or different hammers and stuff like that. And we were not masters in any way. The very basic stuff is, hey, you use what work. But knowing the tools that were there, that was a good thing. It taught you to get things done.
Was he a professional builder or just did stuff around the house?
I would say he's a professional builder. His background was in the construction area, but what I recall, he did everything. He could work on vehicles. He could work with metal. He worked with wood. My guess would be that was a sign of the times. Mm-hmm. You know, that's just what was expected, everyone, when you had to get things done. And you do that. He was a very physically strong individual, and we would just work, and it was good. Those parts of it was good.
Yeah. So when you were around that age, what did you do for fun? Do you have any games you like to play? Or?
Well, as I mentioned, the family size that we came from, we had a family of 8 kids. We were next to another neighbor that actually had 12 kids. And I only knew half of them because the ones that were closest to my age. So our family was big enough that we could get teams together. We played kickball, hide and seek, kick the can, baseball. You know, even if you have 3 people on each team, it was something. At times we would, the neighbors, we would get together and we'd play. And then there was other families. We were down a very rural area. It was a dead end road. And it actually was perfect. Never that much traffic. Much as you get yelled at and your kids to stay out of the street, you kind of knew when everybody was coming down and everybody knew each other. There was a family that we grew up with that had only 2 kids next to us, a couple of them. And we were always doing something. We liked playing outside. We liked playing in the house. And we had a, to me, I thought we had this big, large land area. And it was roughly 6 acres, actually. So maybe 2 acres was lawn, and then 4 acres was woods. I loved it. You could go and play. You could never get lost. You just walk one way or the other, and you're going to hit a street or something, whether you go through a field or anything. So for us, it was easy to go out and play. And if it wasn't with the, whatever games we came up with each other, hide and seek, walking in the woods was always fun.
Yeah. And so if you had to describe the community that you grew up in, say in the 70s and maybe early 80s, how would you describe it here?
As much as the Oneida tribe, I think, has been establishing itself in a sense for each last decade, I think it's been a much more substantial tribe that has a great deal to offer, not only its members, but the surrounding communities. Growing up, I knew I was a member of the Oneida tribe. I actually went to public schools around here. The tribe had established a tribal school, but I couldn't tell you when. So at this point, they have every level, in a sense, past high school, up to high school. So they have a pre-K, K, and then grade schools, junior high, and high school. I never participated in any of that growing up. So I was going to a couple different schools around here growing up. I think that was just the nature of our times. I went to one kindergarten that was, in a sense, a one-room school or one-room building kind of thing. And then I went to probably 3 or 4 different grade schools, that just because where we were, from Lincoln to Highview, Westwood, back to some schools, back to the others. So it was a mixture, and then eventually on to West DePere High School in the area, that where I attended junior high, and at that time high school was together in the same place. So growing up, still a very rural community. We've expanded here. Green Bay was our biggest city, which is still now what we have to deal with. And the pier that I went to, for the smaller entities around here, I may forget some, but there was always a Schwabenen, DePere, East DePere, West DePere, Seymour, Pulaski, a little out in the country area. We lived in Oneida, as I said, and so we took our bus to school. And one of the things that were always funny was our neighbor was the bus driver, and she always worked for the bus company. So I remember, no matter how little I was, almost always had the same bus driver. She just seemed to hit our grades. So this was the good and bad part. She was this excellent bus driver that, no matter, regardless of the weather issues we had to face, she seemed she could get that bus out of the snowdrift or through anything. So rarely was our school ever canceled due to that, because we knew, all right, if she got the bus up, we're getting picked up. So we were lucky that, in one sense, during the school time, the route she would have to take, she could either leave and we could catch the bus before she left on her route, because her route always brought her back down our dead-end road somewhere along the line. So you can either catch the bus early, take that longer trip to get to school eventually, or catch the bus the last time and go. And because of our family, I was usually 2-3 of us together at the time, mm-hmm. getting on the same bus. My older brother and sisters, what I recall, by the time they had reached their high school years, we rarely, if ever, rode the bus together. Mm-hmm. They may have taken another one, but she seemed to be our bus driver for our grades. But everything was really done around home. I mean, for growing up, it was a trip for us to go to Milwaukee. That's where mm-hmm. some of the family was. So we went and visit down there, and my uncles were down there. And so we would love to go and visit. Milwaukee was the big city. You could play, and something was always happening. And for us, it was common to stay with them, sleep on the floor, sleep on the couch. Mm-hmm. There was no ever any hotels, motels kind of thing. And then vice versa. When they would come visit at times from Milwaukee or up here in Oneida, they may stay with us or stay with another family member who would have the big enough house to take everyone in. So growing up, I would say pretty much always country, always rural. There was no real malls. I mean, when they happened in our big area here, it was a big thing, but we didn't go mm-hmm. that much. You get used of playing with the neighbors, finding something to do in your own time, doing your best to stay out of trouble, not get caught. And if you do, then deal with it. I don't know how else to describe it. I think that'd be your best way.
So you mentioned that you went to public schools. So can you remember maybe any moments when you were made very conscious of the fact that you were an Oneida tribe member? Was there ever any tension or conflict, or was it sort of just a background thing?
No, that was kind of common. it's an everyday thing, and even to this point. I get it, I guess. Maybe it's my own self-issues having to deal with, but you can walk in a place or store or restaurant, and all of a sudden you notice right away who's looking at you. And you wonder, you look at me because of the color of my skin, the color of my hair, my size. When comments are made or overheard, you wonder, are they talking about you? In school, one of my best friends at the time, I remember, we got in a fight. We were fighting each other, so we were little boys. We must have been second or third grade. And we were fighting out in the playground, and he's my exact opposite. Why we hit it off, we did. And he was one of my friends, I remember. And Paul and I, he is physically the opposite. He was whiter than white, not to be mean or disrespectful, but he had the palest skin you could think of. He was actually bleach blonde hair. Mm-hmm. And we'd known each other. And we somewhat still know each other. We almost went to school together from start to finish in one sense. Him and I were arguing, wrestling, and someone called us a bad word. It was a term I won't use, but fight between a this and a white. Mm-hmm. And I was so mad when I heard that. I stopped fighting him, and I started fighting the guy who said it. Mm-hmm. And as a kid, whatever you do with fighting isn't the right term, but his friends jumped on me, so Paul jumped on them. So it ended up turning it from a second grade fight of two guys who are friends, mm-hmm. who I don't remember what we started us, that some of the other students made fun of us. In front of me, that when they didn't, I got mad, and that's been some of my trouble growing up, mm-hmm. as I was growing up, was how not to react to those comments that, here we get in trouble, and we get pulled in the office, because I felt that this is purely egotistical. We kick their butt, and we get in trouble, pulled in the office, my mom gets called, my dad gets called, I'm scared as all hell there. What's going to happen? So we told him, just very bluntly, hey, yeah, Paul and I were fighting each other, wrestling around. These kids said something to us. I got mad. So when I jumped on them, they jumped on me, and then he jumped on the rest of them. So together, we were throwing them all around. And that's happened before. But that was a great thing. Mm-hmm. I don't remember who any of the kids are. I just remember Paul being the one that I was originally with, and then we were still with, and things were all said and done. It doesn't always happen, but that was part of it growing up.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. So tell me a little bit more about your mother, if you have any memories.
I guess the term would be housewife or mom, stay at home. For a time, she raised all us kids. My dad had always worked. And recognizing all the challenge they faced, boy, we don't appreciate what our parents go through until we grow up or have a chance to see what those responsibilities are. So trying to feed 8 kids, trying to clothe 8 kids, trying to deal with 8 kids, and all of us are right and anyone else is wrong, and the personal issues that come in. So that was a lot, and a huge challenge. I give them not enough respect for both my mom and dad and what they had to deal with it from us. You know, we did all the same stupid things, some bad and some good. But she always made a meal. She would always make sure food was there. If Dad brought the food home, she would always cook it. Unbelievable cook. Seemed could make everything. And I didn't appreciate that enough. From what I remember. And I didn't. So to have that, and then realize what's provided to us, the guidance. It's good and bad, learning from it. And then as we're growing up, as your family starts yourself, as good and the bad, how do you learn from it? Don't repeat it, but you're hoping that you don't act this way or do these things, and you help your kids or younger ones appreciate what's done. Mm-hmm. Sometimes it doesn't happen, but you hope so. She was probably the nurturer, I guess. That would be this one. She, where the hugs were always there. Mm-hmm. They really didn't ever stop. It was really the father, like I said, from a younger time. By the time going to school, whatever, maybe my dad said, all right, well, you're a young man. No more hugs. Stop crying. Shake it off. Get up. Didn't matter what happened. Mm-hmm. That was always a fun challenge. I use that same language with our kids and grandkids. But it's always jokingly. It's making sure I do share the hugs. It's making sure that I don't want to be that standoffish person, which I think I am. But that's what I recall. That's basically from my mom.
Yeah. So you talked about how your mom cooked. Can you describe like a typical family meal?
Well, I would guess we're a lot like others, where supper was always on the table. We knew it wouldn't happen until Dad got home. Weekends, no real set time. Most of the time growing up, we sat around the table. I don't even do that now. We sit in front of the TV. You know, that didn't stick with me.
Yeah.
But it was nice. For the family that was home, chicken became common. That was something that's cheap and easy. So did hamburger. So did bologna, in the worst case scenario. So jokingly, I'll say the only night around steak is ring bologna. It tastes fantastic, depending how it's made.
Mm-hmm.
But those are foods that you get used to. Sometimes you get tired of. Honestly, it is tough, and that's where it's like, hey, you deal with what you get. So appreciate that, and that'd be some of the things that we would go through. So she would generally do all the cooking. We had at one point the house they bought was fancy. I think it was intended to be, because when it was built, we didn't know this till years later. The basement was a full, complete basement. And also we found speakers in the ceiling of the basement. Mm-hmm. And they were connected supposedly to the radio that you could connect to where in the hallway where we had this, our stereo system. It's one of those old, I don't know what the hell they call them now. But a stereo unit that was as big as a box, looked like a dresser. Mm-hmm. But inside was your radio and your record player and stuff. Well, the wires there, you could connect whatever you were playing from the, and it was only a single story house. You connect your radio to it and the speakers would work. There was all kinds of electrical units downstairs. So you didn't just have one place you had to plug against the wall. You could have it all set up. we used to have, we had a water well. So that was downstairs until we hooked up to the main system, which is more like by the time, probably when I moved out in the 80s. That day came through, but until then we were using a well. All that was there. So in that was this fancy oven. We thought it was fancy. We never used all the buttons. I mean, boy, it seemed like it was like a range that the oven was one that was inserted into the wall of the kitchen. So our stove was separate. Stove was there on top, and then the oven was placed about waist high. And it had the broiler system on the next shelf down. You could set the timer to go off. But hell, I don't remember my mom ever using it to say, okay, you can start something, even back then, 60s and 70s, and then walk away, and it would start cooking at 3 o'clock or 12 o'clock, whatever. She would cook. She always knew when to cook. She always knew when food was ready. So we grew up with the cast iron plates, cooking something, baking something. That's what I remember with the meals doing. And then part of the food connection, and I know we touched on this a little bit before, was the small garden that we grew when we were growing up. My dad pretty much grew. Those are the food connections that I remember mm-hmm. her making.
Did you ever do any work in the garden?
Yeah, I hated it. It was always when cartoons were on. It's like, okay, all right, turn that off. We got to go outside. I got to weed. And it's like, oh, my God. It'd be summertime, and then Dad always seemed to know just when to mix us up and say, get to work. So you'd have to stay out of his sight to go stay busy. So as long as he can't find you, he can't tell you what work to do. But we're weeding the garden, a little planting. My dad always did it. And my grandpa on his side. So did my step-grandpa on my mom's side. And then our uncles, a great uncle of ours that lived in Oneida here all his life. He'd passed back in the 70s. He grew the traditional white corn. I didn't know at the time. I just knew it was corn. But he had raspberries and stuff. And at home, we'd work the garden. I didn't plant. I think Dad, because my always feeling, Dad didn't trust us. Plant it straight, plant it right, and put the right things together. He really did all that, and the older ones did. Once I got older, we did help a little more. But weeding was always a pain in the ass. I remember using, there's a tool, and I'm sure it still exists, but it's just a big wheel, and it has three forks on the back of it. And you generally would use that to pick up the weeds that you're throwing out. You put it in the middle of your laneway, and then you drag it through. I was like that. And because that was a challenge. That was easy. Hey, things doing all work for you. You're just pushing behind. But the kneeling down, the hoeing. But that's what always would come to me of food. I remember when it'd be supper time, and if our garden was ready, Mama would say, go get some potatoes. Go get some beans. Go see if the corn's ready. And we'd just go and pick and dig it up, clean it up. Part of the workload, but I just remember those meals being the best I've ever had.
Yeah. And what did your father do for a living?
He was a tool and die maker. He was in the Navy. I guess I always thought he was in the Navy. He might have been one who slipped in at an early age. Mm-hmm. Whether he got in at 16 or 17, I'm not sure, but barely spent his 3 years in. Right at the end of World War II, so I didn't think he'd go in until mid-40s. No, not World War II. I think it was the Korean War. But he was on a ship, and he was over in, never remember the ocean, more Africa. So I think on the Atlantic that his ship spent time in. He learned a trade there, and when he got out very early, that's when him and Mama got married and started having the kids, that he got a job at a Lindquist tool shop. And he had been there until he retired. So as a tool and die maker, 30 plus years there. And Monday through Friday, Dad's the one, some of the stuff didn't stick. But no matter what went on, it was big on him not to call in, not to miss work. Mm-hmm. Always made it to work on time. Always left. And the challenges he faced had nothing to do with us kids, I think. But like a challenge of the snow. Mm-hmm. I remember getting woke up and had to dig a path out of the driveway so he could get to work. No matter how little we were. But then having that many kids made it a little easier. But I was made it to work. You know, so no matter how much fun they might have had going out, make it on time. Same mm-hmm. could be applied for church. I always seem to go to church every Sunday. So if Saturday night was a celebration, then Sunday still time to go. So he always pushed work, and he did push education on all his kids. He didn't really take the approach of, I want you to do what I do, with all my footsteps. It was usually the other way. He said, I don't care what you go to school for, go to school. Don't look at what I do. If you want to, you're gonna work for it. So go. But that was a big part of him.
Mm-hmm. Were you pretty involved in the church community, or was it just sort of something you did because you had to?
Both. We were involved because we had to, so in one sense. I didn't really honestly like church that much. Got to meet some friends that they maybe I didn't see except for during school or just because of church. My brother and I, we all went to, we call it church school. I guess some other religions. I'm not that well knowledgeable on different types of religions, mm-hmm. but when I heard them talk about, I'd joke and I'd say kiddychasm or catechism or something that apparently was a church school for another area. We just had church school, and we would go. It had basically grade school levels. So we were going every Saturday, every Sunday almost, when it was going on, and learn about the Bible or whatever they're teaching us. But there always seemed to be 5 to 10 kids there. They would break us up at times by age group, but sometimes we'd all be together over the years. And then our church, it's the Episcopal Church in Oneida. That's what we really grew up in and would attend now and then. But I do remember always having fish fries at a certain time of the year, so we'd help cook there, process. I remember different meal events, different community events. Our dad would take us to all the funerals to pay respect, funerals and wakes. And I remember going when we were little. So those are things that, again, were just kind of common to us. There were probably opportunities, and still are, to be a little more involved. But over this lifetime, from being kids to growing up, have had different levels of involvement, different church events. One thing that our church started years ago, it was called the Greens. It's hanging the greens. And it's where you go out and you pick cedar limbs. And what you do is simply take a clothesline rope and you actually tie the greens around the rope itself so it looks like nothing but a thick rope, actually, a very large pipe of cedar greens, pine greens, and then we'd hang it out at the church. So I don't recall when that was started. I think we were pretty young that we started going out into our area, and they would have, my dad was on the vestry, whatever church group that is, but I just remember the vestry. Mm-hmm. And so we'd go, we'd help with breakfast cooking, but that was a project that they started, I think in November, because they wanted the greens hung by Christmas time. Mm-hmm. So we would have to go out in the area around here to find enough greens like that. There was a lot of cutting. It always gets sticky because it still be sap. And then you had to tie it properly. And I'd always get yelled at because I always wanted a nice thick green and tie this little bit on there. And too much, so thin it out, make it stretch. And so and I hated it. If you didn't put enough greens on, you could see the rope. Where the intent is not to have any of that rope really seen. Mm-hmm. Blah, blah, blah. Doing all that stuff, said and done. To hang the greens, you had to go up the church steeple, where the bell tower is, and walk up this rickety old ladder that was made from not only old 2x4s, but pieced together 2x4s, broken 2x4s, knowing which rung was broken, so don't put your weight on it, step over it, still climb up to the next level. And you'd have to do that 2 or 3 times to get to the top of the church roof. You're still inside, you're just between the structure and the roof or ceiling of the church. Mm-hmm. Walk down, I keep thinking, this 1 foot plank, because of the way the church steeple is, usually our roof is faced, at least everything slides down. It was the thing to do. Once you got old enough, you're acceptable, and then you could walk across the length of the church ceiling to the other end where you hang the greens up through this rope. You had to lift it up, tie it off, and then they would just line out. That was a beautiful part that I really liked. I haven't done that in years and years, but I remember being part of the start, and I remember staying involved. It smells fantastic when you see it in the church. Gives a nice scent to it, and gives a nice scene to it.
Yeah. So, do you remember anything growing up, maybe any events that happened that sort of impacted your whole community or drew your whole community together? Maybe something that everybody was talking about at any point? Or?
Not on that big of a scale, I would say. There are always... It's sad when you think about it. I think it would apply to any community when a death's involved, regardless of the age. It's especially harder with a younger one or child. But I think our community's always been tight in a sense that when someone passes, that they stop and make that visit and also help out. When someone needs help building something. I mentioned earlier how my grandfather, that's how a lot of the work he got done and some of the things he did, is he just did. So when people's roof leaked, okay, we gotta go take care of this, so we gotta strip the old roof off and put a different on. There never really, I don't remember being money involved, it was a meal. Mm. And that could be for anything, from not only the roof, but the door, the windows, the car, garage structure. But as far as any kind of, whether it be a catastrophic event or more on a celebration level, I don't recall, from my point of view, growing up, other than at times now, something that happened. When the United Tribe itself has existed, it started taking steps, and this is stuff that I've been told, so just sharing that viewpoint. Mm-hmm. In the 70s, a bingo was established, the game of bingo, to raise money. The United Tribe, and I think other tribes, had that ability to get revenue old bingo sessions. So they used a civic center. Here, that's our youth structure, our gym structure. It was one of the first ones ever built in the area, other than our Norbert Hill Center, which had a couple gyms in it. Mm-hmm. So our civic center in Site 1 started having bingo games. And I believe it started out as just Sundays and then grew from there, different days, different nights. But what it did is allowed them to gain revenue, and that revenue is what led to, I think, to today, and also led the tribe to help establish itself, hire different positions, bring different things on. So at this point, as our tribe's been growing and dealing with this responsibility, I think is a proper word, once revenue comes in, what do you spend it on? I mentioned the schools. We have a police department. We have a health department. All these things. So that was primarily where the funding came from. And I think that at times has brought our community together. As a tribe, we meet twice a year as a whole. Mm-hmm. We can't meet really at any time if notification and steps are followed properly. But there are things like that that come together. And I think we continue to struggle with jurisdictional issues and labor issues, normal human things, mm-hmm. I guess, you know, with racism, with ignorance. So it's just working on how to get through that.
Absolutely. When you were growing up, were you involved with any activities that you would consider uniquely tribal? Was that a big part of your identity?
When the United Tribes established a powwow, I forgot what grade we were at. I think it was the 70s. I don't remember the age. But in my mind, when the Oneida Tribe held its very first Oneida powwow, and at this point, our major powwow is around the 4th of July weekend. Mm-hmm. I couldn't tell you at that time if that was it, but it was held in the same location, at the Norbert Hill Center grounds. At that time, it used to be called the seminary, until the tribe purchased it. It was an old Catholic church or building or structure. Mm-hmm. And so on that hilly areas where the tribe would get together and they would have, just like what now, it was more of a powwow where a lot of the dances that were done, a lot of the outfits that our people would wear, both male, female, children and adults. I tried to learn how to dance. I was more of a traditional dancer. Mm-hmm. I was terrible at it. I had so much trouble getting that beat down. And we practiced. There was, and there still is, if you don't know, you can learn how to, and anyone can. But my dad was really big on it. There's certain pieces of an outfit, a regalia, that everyone wears. So whether you're male and you do this part, there's pieces that go with that, and then same with female and so on. So we were being taught how to be a traditional dancer. And growing up, I remember with this family, and I know most of them still today, I learned I could do a little, but I felt so ashamed and so uncoordinated, I just struggled with it at our time. But we kept at it. That's one of the things Dad made us do, in a sense. And I wish I would have paid attention more. That was something we did. That was something I remember being in grade school. It's kind of funny that even today, that's still being offered. I wasn't part of the dance group that was giving that presentation, but I knew everyone doing the presentation, so I did feel good going out there and going through what I did know. Our dad, at the time, the only powwows I remember going to not only was Oneida, but we used to go to Wisconsin Dells a lot. And it was for those powwows, whatever they call. We just, even then we called them powwow, but I remember going down camping, then dance, then camping. And then again, we never stayed in a hotel. I keep thinking we could never afford that with whoever went. So we knew where we could camp. Mm-hmm. Bring the tent down, park alongside the water somewhere, camp, go dance a little, be part of the powwow, go back, camp, and then go home. Those are probably the closest thing that consistently, our dad would always remind us, don't ever forget, you're part of Oneida, you're part of the Oneida tribe, be proud of that. And I am. A lot of issues to face, but like I said, I guess if you looked at our reservation, what I remember in our head is the Oneida Reservation is on 5 different school districts. Mm-hmm. So you could live across a street from somebody and they would go to a completely different school. And yet you'd have a neighbor that went across the street over there and they went to the same school that you had gone to. whatever, rhyme or reason, I always believed it was part of the assimilation, yeah, or, you know, dissolution of everything, intent. So some friends I knew, as much as we went to school together at the Pier area, there are some, I never went to a Pulaski school or Seymour, things like that, Green Bay, any of those areas. But I had friends that in a sense, went all over, mm-hmm, and just got used to it. So when we had the powwows, when we had different events, and that has really, I think, evolved consistently. Today we have many things that not only members can learn and enjoy, but anyone else who's interested can pick up some information.
How was high school for you?
Good. I was an idiot. I do believe, and I think I get a lot of this from my mom and dad both, and that point of saying you can do anything. You really can. Part of putting your mind to it. I skipped school. I was screwing around a lot. But there are certain classes I loved. I don't know why. I loved history. So I thought I always did good in history class. I liked the teachers there. Tried to fit in, didn't always. I don't know what group I was. I did a little sports, but never stayed with it. And I wish I would have. I played football, I think, only in my sophomore and junior year. Or maybe my freshman, but I didn't play senior year. Tried out for a baseball team, didn't make the cut. That felt really bad. I mean, that was a downside. But in either case, passed. That's one thing Dad stuck with us. Pass high school. There's no reason you can't. So go to class. Do your work. Not really any touch now, though. I haven't been to reunion. Geez, I'm 50, so it's probably been 20 years, 30 years. And then I'd gone to some so-called reunion after the 10th year. I do want to go back. I almost see nobody, really, for living here all my life and going to school. Mm-hmm. Occasionally when I head over to the Deep Pier area, it's rare that I have really any contact with almost anyone from those times. And a lot live in area. I guess our paths just don't cross. I don't look for them. I don't think they look for me. The friends I had in high school, like any other time, you grow up and we kind of stayed in touch after high school the first couple of years, but then life goes on. I'm always curious, I guess, probably like everybody, you know, what's going on. Some I know, but very little I do. And I try and keep the good memories. I don't like looking at the negative stuff and just feeling bad and going down and going down and going down. I don't think that's good for anyone. Mm-hmm. Think of the good times, think of the challenges. Anyone who was hard, hey, you're still here. What'd you learn from it? Help someone when they make a mistake. Help someone when they're down instead of always hammering and hammering.
Yeah. So what did you do after high school then?
High school, I tried going to NWTC, associate. I was thinking of going to college. I always did, but I really didn't take any steps to. In high school, I remember the talk provided to us. I'm guessing it must have been junior high. I did start taking some of the college prep courses that now they're called that. I don't think they ever called that back then. But I liked math. I wasn't good at it, but I was taking it. And part of it because it was a challenge. So I was able to work in geometry and trigonometry. Mm-hmm. What they mean now, I couldn't tell you at all. I just remember the math classes. But I passed. Struggled, but I passed. So passing is a D. You really love a C, so worked on that. My grade point wasn't that high. So out of all that stuff, I liked accounting. I did good there. And so that was my choice. Mm-hmm. For whatever reason, I signed up for accounting with an associate degree in NWTC, and I got a pizza job out of high school. So during the summer, I got a job, signed up, got accepted in NWTC, which is impressive.
What is NWTC?
NWTC is a Northeast Wisconsin Technical College.
Okay.
I don't know if it's still called that. That's an associate degree college. And I only lived a couple miles away. It's right now the one I was looking at. The campus is just on the west side, Green Bay. And then we lived in Oneida, you know, just west of Green Bay itself.
Mm-hmm.
So, yes, you could actually drive a... You could walk there, bike there. signed up, and I was one of those idiots. My dad was the future person talking. Don't let your job get in the way of your school. It's stupid. You're just making pizzas. I'm sure he didn't say it exactly that way, but that's what I recall. And I did the exact opposite. I got a pizza job, and I was working. I had a lot of hours. But it was a new place that hired everybody and anybody. And so I did try to get one of the supervisor managers job. Wasn't qualified. It was a perfect example of, well, we'd love to hire you because you're here now, but you don't have any experience. So I remember asking a question, well, how can I get experience unless you hire me so I can become this? I said, I want to learn more, do more at a pizza job. Learn how to make pizzas and sandwiches and serve. They hired, like I said, anybody. There's a couple people I work with, I grew up with, that worked there as well. And because of their work shift and their needs, which interfered with my classes, and as an idiot, I signed up for a night class, which means you're going for a three-hour class, which you could have learned in 3 days, you learn in one night, mm-hmm. which means you got a week's worth of homework every night. Mm. So it sounds good to those growing up, saying, well, if I only go to school one night a week, then I can do whatever I want the rest of my life. And that was what I did. I made the first class, the second class, missed the third, I think I made the fourth, and then I dropped. Because at 1 week, and I never caught up, ever. By the time class started, we got our curriculum. We were supposed to have read 3 chapters on the first day of class. That's what we were going to cover. I think I read 1. I'm not even sure if I did that. And then you said 3 chapters of work to hand in. And that was 1 class. And I eventually dropped out of school. Told my dad, I remember, and I was worried. Dad was pretty tough on us, but, you know, we were never grounded or anything like that. Just, you didn't like that look, and you didn't like that tone, and you didn't want that talking. So I remember shaking his head. Told you not to quit school because of work. This work is not worth it. Find a way to keep going, but go to school. Quit that stupid job. So I quit work school for a stupid job that fires me because they hired everybody. So when they brought on 100 employees, but by the time the grand opening was done, they got down to the work shift, found out the regular schedule. I had no experience because I wasn't hired. I'm one of the people they let go. So within 3 months, drop school, drop the job, get dropped by the job, being pissed. Worked at a friend that helped me hire. He worked for a roofing company. So we did that, some tar work, more commercial roofing. So we were ripping up old roofs and then repairing or replacing with newer ones. Worked at a car wash. I remember I wanted to do something and not work for Oneida Tribe. It's because I wanted to do that. One thing Dad said is don't rely just on Oneida. He goes, you got to find something. You got to do something. Don't just sit there and take. And that's what I get out of our conversations. And what can you do? Don't wait for me. Go through it. And then here, that's when Bingo got it to be bigger. So from high school, out of all that bullshit and learning, I ended up getting a Bingo job.
What year was this?
Probably 83, because I graduated in 1982. Went through all this stupid stuff, life-ending crap. It sounds funny. I'm glad I'm still alive. The things I've done that are so stupid, I'm glad people and whoever is there helping me at times gave me that guidance or helped. 82, 83, and somewhere in, I think it was 83 to 84, that I got a job with the tribe. And that's what Dad would talk about to us. He said, don't take these easy jobs. Don't stay. If you're going to stay, at least get your feet on the ground. Then move on. So we had seen some of the younger ones, my friends. Just gimme, tape, brand new shoes. Wearing hand-me-downs. Brand new clothes. Going out all the time. And I did all that stupid stuff. But Bingo job started. Worked it, tried it, and that's out of high school, where it took me a year or two, I figure, but at least started.
Mm-hmm. So what was that Bingo job like?
I didn't know, you know, when I lived, well, where we lived, Dead End Road, you could cut through the fields, so that's what I did.
So you lived at home throughout all this time, I imagine. Okay.
Trying to get out. Dad always told you, get out of the house. When you're 18, you get your butt out of there. Go do something. So he didn't push join the service. He didn't want the kids to. He never talked to the girls that way. The girls could get a job, go to school or something, but he would talk to the boys. Don't use service. Yet, my brothers went. My brother was in the Air Force, Ricky, and Kenny was in the Marines. Mitchell was in the Marines. No, Kenny was in the Army. But the rest of us didn't go in. And with that in mind, I moved out. I was moving in with a friend of mine, which is stupid. We were the same stupid kids. Screwed everything up. Waste of money. Waste of time. And some dump. But trying it. Ended up moving back home. Got this job. At home. I was telling myself, get a job, get out. You know, I remember Dad saying, he wasn't that mean. I didn't say it that way. But if you needed help, I could always go to my dad for anything. And it's okay, get this job. And I've lived in a couple dumpy places. I've lived with family. I lived in a sleeping room at one point. My room was big as this office you're in, smaller even. And it's because it was an old house in Green Bay that they divided up into probably 8 rooms. There were 4 rooms downstairs, 3 or 4 rooms upstairs, all shared bathrooms, shared kitchen. It was a dump, but it was a place. And I couldn't afford it very long because I didn't have a job. So got in, got out, got home, got a job. Started making money, started looking around, got an apartment finally, bingo. I remember, didn't know what to wear. There really was no uniform. It was wear nice clothes, be respectful. I really never worked it before, so like a bingo job from calling numbers, which you have to have a good voice for and be attentive and blah, blah, blah. I wasn't. So I tried it, and then the other work is a floor worker, which I believe... exchanging your card if you're a player, if you're on different cards and stuff like that. And if someone won, you'd have to go and yell back the numbers and things. So, tried that. And then the tribe had moved in from bingo to, if those who might know what instant tickets are, that's what I remember calling them, or tickets. It's the lottery tickets. You buy them from a nickel to a dollar. Try and win money if you get the right one. From bingo, I really changed because I was only there for a while. That when I started, I think it was in 1986. Oh, excuse me. Our Oneida Tribe has established a police department, I believe, in 1984. And there was a dual responsibility. They were not only part of the security department for the bingo hall, they also were a brand new tribal police department, which was going through the jurisdictional issues of cross-deputization with Brown and Allegheny County, because that is where the Oneida Reservation is in, almost split. Half of it's in Brown County, other half's in Allegheny County. The Oneida Tribe does not have a court system of its own, but the ability of tribal nations is to work out an agreement with those jurisdictional entities that have authority, from the Bureau of Investigations to the state to the local level, so it's just counties, so you get deputized. In 85, I think I applied for a police department, and I got in, I think in 86. That was a dual role. You do get recognized as a tribal police officer, but your shift will change generally every other month. 1 month you are a security guard, still a tribal police officer at the bingo hall as it was expanding into the casino and the gaming that you see now. And at the other times you're in a squad and you are with full authority to be a law enforcement officer for the Oneida Tribe and the surrounding community. That is probably one of the biggest changes my life had taken at that point.
What appealed to you about that job over the previous bingo job?
Bingo reminded me of what my dad said. I remember him talking about, oh my God, don't work at the bingo hall. Everybody works at the bingo hall. Like I said, from then it was probably started out 70s, so it'd been going strong, almost 10 years. People we know come and gone are still at the bingo hall, and some still are. I bet you they're still there. It was a starting job. Bingo hall to tickets, which is another form of gambling, gaming, to the old, people probably don't remember this, slot machines, when they were being built for tribes, because Class 3 gaming, which is what those slot machines are, and start getting into table games and such, is put your nickel in, your quarter in, your dollar in, pull the lever, and you win, such as that. What entities had been able to do is take and almost say, this is a ticket machine. So now you're putting your dollar in this machine, and you're pulling a lever. It's like you're ripping off the tabs of a ticket. So to where we are today, I'm covering a lot of history in a sense. But so gaming and casinos, Class 3 gaming was growing within tribes. Oneida was one of them in that time frame of the 80s. So from the mid-80s on, it was allowing expansion of roles that our tribe would offer, from the schools to departments to things. So the bingo games and the gaming job was nice, good money, start, solid. It's how we used to work something. And to me, I thought it was so cool. So such an opportunity to be part of a brand new department like the Oneida Tribal Police Department. And that, not knowing, it was not my goal. I'm sure it was one of mine as a kid. What do you want to be when you grow up? Fireman, police officer, astronaut, you know, everything. But at that age, I was in my very early 20s, and this came up, and people I talked to, and hoping to learn, don't stop doing stupid things. You grow up and you're a young person, and I was so happy to be accepted that I got the job, and started. Didn't know what I was doing, didn't have a clue, but I just knew it was law enforcement responsibility. So I got to go through the certification process. You go through, I didn't have a degree, but any law enforcement officer in the state of Wisconsin at least has to go through, I thought it was 12 weeks or 15 weeks, I honestly don't recall, through a certification process. And most of the technical schools provide that. So NWTC, but also I ended up going down to Fox Valley Technical College down in Appleton. That's where I received my certification process. So you get everything of going through arrest powers, shooting range, driving range, hands-on teaching, as well as just being the teaching part itself in a classroom style.
So you mentioned that gaming and the casinos were getting bigger throughout the 80s. In your own personal experience, did you see that having any sort of impact on the community where you lived?
It had a huge impact. I think it opened up doors for things that we looked at. And what I liked about the Oneida Tribe is their direction seemed to consistently go towards how can we help the community? How can we help its members, its tribal members? And at the same time, it ends up being kind of this ripple effect that you're never really helping just tribal members, because we intermarry, because we're related, because we're friends, you know, whatever. There's a positive impact. Well, negative and positive, but there was something there. So as gaming was growing, they're able to have these other jobs that can provide to our membership. So they can help with the poverty level. They can help with the unemployment levels. Looking at this as a casino is growing to where I think we've taken steps to our evolution in a sense of our tribe and evolving, I think, for the better, to having a Department of Public Works. So our DPW program, they can help with road care, building care, lawn care, all these things. An environmental department, a school system that runs K through 12. The Indian Health Center that not only works through the federal government, but we're part of. And then on the casino end, our enterprise end, the profit end, having the one-stops in the stores. It grew. None of it happened overnight. And a lot of it took time to evolve and develop. And I think gaming is what provided the opportunity. And that's why I feel helped our community grow and our tribe grow.
Absolutely. So when you were working as a tribal police officer then, who were the people that you were mostly dealing with? And what were those interactions like?
It actually was a pretty good mixture. I would feel that our department had some growing pains like any law enforcement entity that grew, but it was a struggle because tribal, again putting on that tribal attachment, people that said, you're tribal police, you have no authority over me, I'm not a tribal member, and yet what gave us the authority over everyone and anyone actually was the deputization process that was established with Brown County and then Outagamie County, working with the other departments. So a good mixture. It was never just tribal calls that we were sent to. Although we had a dispatch, our department, which has one now, 24/7 basically, at that point, we had someone that just worked the daytime. And that was only if they got called. But because of radio, we shared frequencies and we were able to get direction from Brown County. So it covered all areas. So we would get calls that would ask for us, and we would also go and help any officer that needed help as well. I loved it. It was a challenge. It was scary, and it was fun. That's something I guess I miss is you never know. And if you keep a handle on that and you don't get overwhelmed, it would be okay generally. Mm-hmm. But it wasn't just, you're a tribal law enforcement officer, so you must have dealt with just tribals. No, we didn't do that. It was a little bit of everything. And the growth of that department, I think, has done nothing but help our communities, both tribal and non-tribal, to help one another. You know, to rely on one another. And there was all kinds of issues in there too. I'm glossing over the negative stuff. But it was able to happen.
Great. Okay, well, unfortunately, I think session one has to come to an end. So let's...